Hey friends, I just wanted to jump in here real quick and let you know that around the 45-minute mark, we did have a glitch with our audio in this episode. So you're going to see it switch to our backup audio. Well, you're going to hear it switch to our backup audio. You will not see a difference if you're watching it. If you're not watching it, then hopefully you'll only see the road. But we did have to switch to our backup audio, about 15, 20 minutes of that. So the quality is a little bit worse, but I highly recommend sticking around listening to the rest of it. This is a wonderful conversation with Brad Garnott, who's a great friend from Homeschool Performing Arts. You'll hear a little bit more about him in a moment. But it's just such a wonderful, worthwhile conversation. So many rich insights that I can't wait to share with you guys. So stick around because it is absolutely worth it. Hey everybody, welcome back to Artist of the Way. I'm John.
And I'm Nate.
And we are the hosts of the podcast. And today we have a guest who I've been trying to get on for a long time. A good friend and I would say a mentor of mine, Brad Garnott, who is the executive director of Homeschool Performing Arts. This was a real treat. We initially were talking to having him on because he is a part of our leadership team for the conference, the committee that's put it all together and helped design it.
Cultivate 2025.
Yes. Nate's like, come on, John, use the name. we worked on that name. Yes, we didn't really end up talking about the conference a whole lot, but we talk a lot about his story. Exactly. It's not very much.
Not a whole lot.
No. We talked a lot about Brad's story and just a lot of really great insights from his life and his work. I think it was a really great conversation.
It was a beautiful conversation. And at the conference, he's going to be teaching singing, correct?
Yes, he's vocals. doing a workshop on an introduction to vocal technique for people who feel anxious about their voice or feel like maybe they can't sing. He's definitely been helpful for me in that and a lot of people. He's also going to be part of a panel that's doing like a masterclass workshop. So
cool.
We're going to have a couple of attendees that will be selected to perform a piece, a monologue or a song in front of this panel. And then this panel will give them direction. So people can watch the performer and learn from the feedback that they get for themselves as performers, or they can watch and observe how do these three people direct this actor? How do they give direction? Because that's something that's really hard to learn if you're trying to learn how to direct is
right.
What is giving direction? How do you do that? So,
right.
We're hoping that that'll give a good opportunity for people to be able to glean some insights from that. So
that'll be great. The conference in general is going to be so cool.
Yes,
the lineup is awesome.
Yeah, and I think everybody on the leadership team is their DNA. I think has seeped into it well. I think they've really brought a lot of passion to it.
It's great.
It's really been a communal thing to put together. So if you want to maybe learn from Brad, see Brad at the conference. He'll definitely be there along with a lot of really great leaders in this Christian theater world. So it's wonderful.
And it's a one-day conference, but it is so full
it's
of stuff. You have kind of three different focuses that are going on at the same time, right? There is the performer focus, the director focus, and faith focus. And people can bounce around to which ones look interesting to them. But check out the website, artistoftheway.com, right?
Yes.
Is that it? Nice.
You got
the URL.
And
it's a full, interesting schedule.
Yeah, and a lot of great instructors. I say it all the time, but I'm pinching myself that we've put this together. It's great.
He's got welts.
Yes, I do. It's painful. It hurts. But yes, without further ado, we're excited to share with you this conversation with Brad Garnott. Well, thank you for coming onto the podcast. I think you've been a guest that I've like had in my brain to have on since I started. So it's been like over 2 years now that I wanted to have you on.
Right.
So I'm very excited to get to have this conversation. And I think there's some things here I haven't picked your brain about before or heard your story about before. So I'm excited to hear some of those.
See if you're shocked or not.
I know. Brad. And Nate's here.
Hi.
Welcome, Nate.
You already said hi to the audience. But
yeah, and that's right.
You, even though you've already... Everything's breaking down, but it's fine.
Nice to see you, Brad.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So first, I was wondering if you could just share a little bit with us and with any of the audience who may not know you, just what's some of your story as an artist, as a Christian? How did you kind of get to this point, sort of the, I don't know, Cliff Notes version.
Cliff Notes version. Okay, yeah, we'll try and keep it short.
You can go longer.
Okay. That's true. Okay. This could be the entire podcast.
All right.
That would be fun.
There might be some overlapping things.
Sure.
Things we talk about later. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that always happens. Mm-hmm. But as an artist, I think generally speaking, I'm thankful for my heritage. My parents were musicians, are musicians. Mm. And so some of my youngest memories would be going, they would perform at churches, you know, they would do a Sunday evening service and, you know, my mom plays piano and her and my dad would sing. And so I guess I would say I grew up singing and my first solo, I can remember at 14 in a church on a Sunday night, there was probably, you know, 44 people there or something in this little country
singing?
Church. We will glorify the King of Kings.
Okay.
That's a good thing to say.
Yeah. That was good.
Nice.
And
very theologically sound.
I approve. Right. So that, you know, so I grew up singing and was in choirs then in school and loved that. My senior year of high school, I had a friend talk me into trying out for the musical at school.
Mm.
Okay. They had just finished a new auditorium building project and all of that the prior year. And so I was like, okay. And because I was a guy and because I could sing and for some reason they put me in the show. And I did find that like that was a really great growing experience. And I kind of decided to set aside my other priorities, which were basketball.
Oh man!
You
could have gone so far.
Actually, that was part of my thinking. Is like, okay, I know there is a ceiling that is not far away from me in basketball.
That's true. That's
and,
the hard
thing. About that. So I did not try out for the team, even though I had worked really hard over the summer to try and pick up some playing time and all of that. But then was cast in the show in the winter musical that they did. And so
what school did you go to?
Caledonia High School.
Okay.
That's where I graduated from.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yep. So we did Andy Get Your Gun. I played Frank Butler it just was something that I see God's steering me in this direction and it also growing me in that experience and I'm very grateful for that. I kind of lost where was the end of this going, but
today, so we have time.
a few more years to go.
Okay. It is interesting the different kinds of ways theater can push you versus sports.
Mm.
Did you find like sports came easy to you, or is that something you had to push yourself in and then theater pushed you in a different way?
I had to push myself in sports. I mean, part of it was sort of unorthodox in the sense of I played baseball growing up. And that was, you know, my dream was, you know, to be a shortstop for the Detroit Tigers, like Alan Trammell. But I was homeschooled from fifth to ninth grade. And so when I got done with eighth grade, there was nowhere to play because back in those days, you know, there weren't travel leagues and all that. At least I wasn't, nobody recruited me for those. At least, I don't know.
They didn't tell me that there were.
So then I switched to basketball because you could do that by yourself I was late to that.
Yeah.
And I also kind of consider myself a late bloomer, because then after I didn't play basketball, I played a lot of basketball and now I guess I would say I'm confident when I'm playing basketball. So I don't discredit sports, or I don't I appreciate them. I love to watch them, love to play them, everything from volleyball to ping pong to, you know, whatever. I love it all. And I like to learn about them. So of course, you know, pickleball, I'm now into pickleball because that's new and fun. And
it's good. Yeah.
Okay, good. I thought you were shaking your head.
Me and my wife, Allie, we were going to go play last night, but it didn't work out. But we're going to do it soon. Yeah. It's a very nice, just pick it up and do it game.
Right. And then you can also make it a more intense,
right.
If that's your vibe,
right?
Which it that's is nice. For me. I mean, I like the casual play and all that, but I do like the intensity and the like. I'm trying as hard as I can and yes. diving for balls.
See,
and things. Anyway,
that's what's wonderful about sports. You mm-hmm. just try as hard as you can and get that intensity out in ways that I think it's hard to in other parts of yeah. life.
Although I would sort of relate that to things in theater. You know, mm-hmm. when you're talking about, I guess I would apply the same intensity to when I am watching, you know, choreography yep. and I'm like, no, you all have to hit the beat at the same
yeah,
time. It
yeah.
doesn't work if you don't.
Yeah.
And so that that drive or sort of the all-outness of it,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you're going to sell out. You're going to be, yeah, you're going to sell out. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like those things where you can dive around and, you know, be aggressive and
yeah. mm-hmm.
beat somebody.
Well, it's like a little microcosm of life that like you get to, in this small space, really push yourself and strive for excellence
yeah.
and mm-hmm. have failure and then recover from it.
Right. It's
right
a safe
here.
Place to
yeah.
have failure mm-hmm. to try something and yeah.
work sure. up those muscles.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. It's an important thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for allowing me to talk sports with someone
right,
on this
right,
podcast.
Right.
It's like I feel so soothed.
Yes.
No, I think there's a lot of similarities in like what you guys are saying, though, and art, like you were saying. I think of theater especially. It's different muscles, but you're working those muscles. You have to chase it as intensely. It's different muscles. But for you to really give something that actually is of substance, you've got to really put in work.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be, I think, as dedicated. It's a
yeah.
different part of your brain and different muscles in your body, a different
yeah.
type of discipline, but you do have to give it that all as well and go through whatever microcosm you're going through in rehearsals and in the performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I see similarities in the beauty of it, like the structure
mm-hmm. yeah.
and the
yes.
logic and the
right.
like,
because you've got these sort of guide rails that you can play between
yeah.
that you have
mm-hmm.
some freedom to explore within. But
yeah.
you also can't go outside of those
right.
guidance
yeah.
rules.
There's
things that
it.
You have to be consistent with,
yeah.
Which is, you know, why people roll their eyes at the NBA and and traveling calls and all,
right.
you know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like, is it a rule or is it not a rule? You
mm-hmm.
know? And so actually I would say that's a thing that in the telling of story that I think is an important piece. You,
mm-hmm.
you can't, generally, you can't just be mixing conventions like,
right.
okay, we're going to mime all of act one.
Right.
But now in act two, we're going to have props all over the place.
Right.
Well, that like, that doesn't seem logical.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's not fair to the audience
right.
to expect them to suspend their disbelief on this, but then like totally,
mm-hmm.
you know, throw them a curveball.
Yeah.
Right, right. It's like neither of those things should you be doing completely for yourself and just what feels good to you. Like if you're playing basketball and suddenly you're just doing ballet during the third quarter. It's like, what is happening here? This is not what this is.
Right.
Do what it is.
True. But it would really confuse the other players.
You know, I actually kind of would do. I've done before some. I had theater in my bones before
you
I
did.
Had an outlet
it
for it.
It was calling
so,
you.
Yeah.
Right.
What was it that eventually led you to pursue theater and theater education as a career instead of just kind of the thing you were doing in high school?
Yeah, yeah. That's probably part two of the story here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that when I was in high school, I was like, oh, being on stage is great once I discovered it, right? And
yeah.
I'm like, man. And I remember my high school director talking about when she performed and all that. I'm like, why did you ever stop performing? Why would you not want to be the performer?
Mm-hmm.
Again, my naivety and youthfulness, youthful exuberance, maybe. I give myself some credit there. But I had, again, by God's grace and his working, I had an opportunity where somebody from my church who led a co-op asked me to direct just like a small thing for their co-op.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first taste of like teaching and
yeah.
coaching mm-hmm. And then also the like art and like, oh, I get to have a hand in the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
not just my thing.
Right.
Yeah.
As an actor. And so that, that really, I would say, opened my mind and I would say opened a passion for something, for working with people, for crafting the whole. Again, very infantile in its stage, but again, a piece of what God used to steer my life path.
Right.
Because I look back at that, I don't know why they asked me to do it. I kind of think I was the only one they knew who did any theater.
Sure.
That's kind of my guess. Although, just to testify to God's sovereignty and working, I did just at a couple of years ago at the funeral of the lady who had asked me to. There was somebody else who said, I remember meeting with her and praying with her for, like, God, who would you have for, you know, doing this tiny little production in this tiny co-op thing?
Yeah.
And so that was, I mean, I didn't know that. I mean, I guess I could assume they were seeking God's guidance, but I hadn't specifically heard it or talked. I mean, I hadn't talked to them, either one of them, in, you know, 20 years or something, 25 years. But so thinking of that, again, a stone in the brook that steered me a different direction. So
those prayers changed your life.
Yeah. Even though they didn't know they were directly praying for me.
Right.
And yeah, so then kind of fast forward, I guess, to I was in school for a couple of years, still kind of thinking performance-y. And then I was out of school for several years and working and got married, had a couple of kids. And by a few years after that, I just really felt God leading me to I was into teaching. So I went back to school to get my music ed degree to sort of kind of finish the other half.
And, what did you go to school for the first time?
I was vocal performance to begin with. Okay. I did switch to education because somewhere between the start of school and, you know, a couple years in, I did meet a girl who then became my wife. And I was like, I would like to get married someday. And so I don't think performing is the way to make that happen, at least in my situation.
Yeah.
Kind of like basketball. It was not going to be the way to support.
Yeah.
Although I did get to coach basketball, which was another piece of learning about how I liked working with people.
Who did you coach?
Oh, way back, the Southeast Cougars.
The Southeast Cougars.
Yeah.
I played for the Hudsonville. I coached for the Hudsonville Hornets.
Oh, yeah. Now, this would have been the early version of it, you know, because that goes back a good long ways. Yeah. But
nice. Yeah. Southeast Cougars.
Yeah.
Blue.
So then, I guess, what's the next fast forward would be how I got, and this would also kind of explain how HPA started, but when I went back to school, they had implemented a requirement for graduating was you had to have an internship.
Okay.
Well, I was married, had two kids. I was working basically a full-time job in a three-quarter to half amount of hours.
Yeah.
And again, God's providence there where they allowed me to work after hours. It was customer service, so it didn't really make sense.
Yeah.
That wasn't helpful to them for me to
There's
be
no
able
customers.
To. I mean, I had a lot of, you know, work, you know, paperwork and, and all that sort of thing. But so basically for my internship, I made up a situation where I would do for a co-op, like for a co-op, I did a choir class and I did a drama class and I would do a junior high school class, you know, for choir and an elementary choir and then a junior high school drama and a junior high school choir. And so I presented this to my, supervising professor. And she agreed to be the supervisor for my internship.
Wow.
That's
awesome.
So again, as I look back, I got to praise God for, you know, even putting her within, I guess, creative mind and open to non-conventional, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, I charged a small tuition and did it and built that. Like that was that. So I went ahead and did it the next semester. It met a need and it was, I enjoyed it. And so it kind of grew from there. I added another location and that was kind of the early life of that. I guess to fast forward, when I was finishing school and I did my student teaching, was in a really fantastic situation at Jennison Public High School.
Okay.
Under some really great men who had great music programs.
Nice.
And learned a lot from Les Rousey so I frame all that to say I did not have a poor experience with Den led me somewhere else.
I had a really public school.
Yeah.
I'll get back at you.
I had a really good experience and loved what they were doing. But as I was coming to the end of my student teaching, I really sensed God leading me to do this, take this path rather than what was my plan, which was teaching choir in school.
Yeah. Okay.
And so then. Yeah, go ahead.
What was that like? Was that a scary move to embrace that instead of the structure of a public school choir job?
Providing for a family with this thing that you're just starting by yourself?
Okay, that is a fantastic question because I do think it's a big part of the testimony. Mm-hmm. The prior year, in that year leading up to that point, in Sunday school, we were doing... experiencing God, and we were studying the names of God.
Okay.
And I look back again and say, this was God's grace. He taught me in our study of that about him as Jehovah Jireh, the Lord will provide, when he provided the ram for sacrifice.
Yeah.
And that when I sensed him leading me this, then I said, okay, you're going to have to be Jehovah Jireh, because I had two kids.
Yeah,
it was not going to be lucrative, and there wasn't even anything to say there was going to be anything.
No lucre at all.
Right. So that was something that I feel like he prepared me to obey him by giving me that lesson, and knowing him better that way. I can say, like, as I look back, I'm like, I was very narrow minded in my, like, you got to provide money because I need to be responsible and care for my family and all that. So I need you to provide money. As I look at all of the ways he's provided, it is just, there's so many layers. It's so much more. When I think of even like locations to perform. Mm-hmm. And I think of like scripts, right?
Because
I wouldn't say there's just an unlimited amount of good scripts.
Right.
And
especially in the particular context of high school theater,
then
high school Christian theater, then very large cast high school theater now.
Yeah.
That's limiting.
Right. So there's things that are very, again, he's not limited by conventional.
Right.
How we even got into where it is that we normally perform now, was just, again, his working out and working through people, things that I couldn't have done. Right.
So
I'm very, thankful for that. So yeah, that was a big piece of it. And it's just, I think of it kind of like the scripture that's like talking about, these things are to show the manifold wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I think of manifold at many layers and the interweaving of tapestry. So when I think of Jehovah Jireh, like, yes, it is providing for redemption. And yes, it is providing, for our needs. But it's like grace and his gifts are, it's like so many layers of that.
Yeah.
So cool.
Anyway, that's, good. I appreciate that question because that was, again, an important pillar in the rope, if you will, of steering.
I feel like that can be just a challenging thing to trust sometimes, especially if you're like really trying to be like, trying to be a good Orthodox Christian that has like a really good view of what salvation is about and what God is about. Like, I feel like there's a strong hesitancy to be like, God's going to give me so much more, you know, like he'll give me what I need. And it's probably going to be hard because he wants to refine me. And, you know, it's all going to be this challenge that I'm really only going to make it through with him, like dragging me by a leash, but at least I'll have been dragged up there. You know, I think it's hard for, at least it is for me. Maybe I'm just projecting my issues on the world. I think it's hard a lot of times to be like, no, he'll give us more than we can ask or imagine. And that doesn't just mean salvation, though it does, which can be hard to square with like, well, there's also suffering and lack in the world, but he does say, I want to give you an abundant life. Yeah. I want to give you more than you can ask or imagine. So that it's amazing to get to see a testimony of that. And, you know, I echo a lot of what you're saying where I'm like, yeah, all these, anything that I have, I feel like I can see how that's come from God. Just from that. And it was not me. But it is, I feel like even after seeing that, it's still scary. I'm like, okay, but are you going to do it this time?
Right.
Or am I just assuming you are, and I'm going to go for this crazy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's cool to see that testimony of it.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm gonna go slow, audience. Just take a breather.
Digest that.
Yeah, Nate, help them digest that while I look.
So you gotta chew it first. People don't always remember.
Things when I ask them to stall for me because I need to go get a book from the
first part of digestion is your teeth.
So, is it?
Yeah, we could just talk about this now.
Well, I mean, you're chewing it,
right?
So that would be because then you're breaking. Because
you're breaking it down, preparing it for the stomach. Mm-hmm. Have you found your question yet?
Who knows what's going to be called? I got invested in this digestion conversation. Oh, I haven't even asked one of my regular questions that I always ask.
The audience is like, where's the question?
I don't think I've asked either of them. I know. They're like, come on, John. I just got into the conversation. It was great. I'll ask you the two questions I always ask everybody now because I haven't done that yet. One, I'm wondering, what things are you working on right now, first of all?
Okay. And can I answer right now with what I just got done with and then what's coming up?
Yeah,
that'll be fine.
It has to be literally what am I doing. Well, I just say because this summer I was part of the story production.
Oh, sure.
And as an actor.
Right.
And
what did you play in that?
Because it is a wide variety of things.
Right.
I did Abraham and Job. Okay. And
nice.
You know, bad guy Pharisee and some stuff like that.
Pharisee number 5.
Right. And, along with, you know, obviously the ensemble is sharing the scripture.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
cool.
It's an artful compiling of scripture around the story book that was, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago or something.
Yeah.
I
think it was like 2012 or something.
Was it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
In that, and then COVID shut down.
Oh,
part of that performance.
Right.
But I've been through the rehearsals of that show.
Yes. You know, that was a painful time for sure.
Yeah, indeed.
But yeah, that was good to do. Good, to, you know, it's always good to you know do the shake some rust off and get back in there and like, okay, if I'm yelling this up to my students all the time, am I doing it?
Yeah.
Am I doing what I would yell at them?
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. Anyway, that just was the end of July. So, but now we have just started the process of this season for Homeschool Performing Arts. So we have coming up in Grand Rapids, we have Honk, the musical, which is a really great story and really creative telling. It's not all kiddie, which the title can sometimes lead people to believe, but it's good and deep and good music and fun story.
Yeah. I just saw it for the first time when Midway did it.
Oh, yeah.
Really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I think it's smart and there's lots of good things to dig into for the story.
Yeah.
And then Kalamazoo, our grew up in Kalamazoo, is doing The Clockmaker's Daughter.
What is that about? Because I've never heard of that.
It's not The Clockmaker's Daughter.
Oh, it is okay, about The Clockmaker's Daughter, yes.
Okay, cool. We can move on then.
Right. The first thing that she learns is how to chew her food.
which is the first part of my digestion.
Yes.
You're learning.
I am.
Yeah, well, you want a short synopsis?
Yeah, I mean, like the premise.
Yeah, it's, well, okay, let's go premise. Yeah, because it's about a guy. It's set in, you know, sort of medieval-ish, but there's a clockmaker, and but he loses his daughter, he is working on creating a replacement daughter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So it is
you probably ought not do that, I'm guessing.
It worked fine for Frankenstein.
Right. Yeah, and you know, so it's a really great. It's new. I don't know if it's been done in Michigan before.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, it's a really cool. Sweet. The music is fantastic. It's a deep. I guess would say, you know, you have to contemplate and wrestle with some things, and isn't necessarily all rosy.
Sure.
But really well constructed, really smartly written,
like a clock.
Yeah.
The author is like, I'm going to write this about me. I'm a clockmaker.
I'm so intricate with my plot. Good job, me.
Yeah, it's good though. And then Lansing closes our season in April with Annie.
Nice.
Which is lots of fun. As I think back of God's providing scripts, I do remember the first time that I directed Annie being like, I really am not interested in directing, and I don't really, love it. But once I did it, I really fell in love with the story. I think, again, there's lots of good meaty stuff in there to wrestle with, and you know, if you can just keep your if you can keep your young lady from not screaming everything, then it can actually be pleasant.
Wow.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
It's an accomplishment.
It
can be done.
Right. So anyway, that is the season. We have an unconventional rehearsal schedule in that we rehearse once a week through starting in the fall. And then we kind of have a 2.5 week blitz at the end where we move into the theater and put it all together and then open the show and close it, strike, and get out of there. And so it's anyway, so that is what I'm doing, but that is over the whole year.
Right.
Cool.
And I guess one other thing I'll just throw out is we as a staff are going to be doing When Calls the Heart.
Yes,
really? I saw
that. Which this is going to tie some circles, and I'll share this at least with our audience or whatever along the way, but the one of my professors at Cornerstone two professors at Cornerstone wrote it. So one wrote the music and one wrote the book for it. But lady, Dr. Galloway, who wrote the music for it, was the one who was my supervising professor, who approved and oversaw my internship. Again, so one of these full circle moments. So that's super exciting to me. And I was also in the premiere when it premiered at Cornerstone.
I thought so, because Master Arts did that several years ago, and my little brother was in it. And I think he like showed like who was in the original cast. I think I saw.
Yeah, there's a picture in the front of the script and all. You're right.
Nice.
That's fun.
So it's that this is our 25th season of main stage productions. So that is part of a celebration. I mean, you could call it a celebrating, a thanks, kind of a customer appreciation, if you will.
Cool.
Some of it is like. Hopefully a gift to our students, you know, that they can see us again as it'll be after this season, you know, it's in the summer.
Okay.
And so,
where are you going to do that one?
That is in the works still, but probably around Grand Rapids is where we'll actually perform.
Cool.
Which is the most center, if you will, of of all of our families and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Cool. Neat. So the other question, I feel like I'm like, how long are we? We're a ways in. We're like half an hour in. This is probably the longest I've gone without asking the second question.
The second question.
I'm just flabbergasted at myself. But what are ways for you, either as an artist creating or as somebody taking in art, that you feel like God is using art in your life right now?
I think having just done the story, there was lots of consumption and memorization of scripture and considering those. So that was an artful, again, presentation or construction that, you know, hopefully, you know, some of that is gets in here. And I mean, that's what we hope for the audience, too. But but even thinking of
the return void.
So I think, I guess if we can go big and philosophical or something, I think all, like, there's just so many ways in which we can be caused to consider and see how do things, like, what did God, how does this reflect God as a creative person or as a being or a loving father or, you know, somebody who is, you know, coaching and prodding us or even just like, or him as a logical creative creator, like the construction of things. And so if, I mean, you can try and get away from structure, but then you can't ever really get away from structure because we live in a structure.
We are we are a structure.
It may be feel chaotic,
right,
but not to him. And so, you know, if you think of music, and I like all sorts of music, you know, from opera to heavy metal, and so like they each have their own, if you will, same construction.
It's basically the same thing: opera, heavy metal.
Yeah,
they're really going for it.
I mean, they do have some of the most extra costumes.
In stage performance. I feel like that circle kind of, it's like the horseshoe theory, the opera and heavy metal.
Small steps, but even, you know, even when you think about things like jazz or whatever that are like, you know, complex and maybe free flowing, but still free flowing within some sort of structure.
You're in a key.
Right.
You have
even if you're meandering.
Right.
there is at least somewhere you started and you
you
go somewhere. And, so I just think there are opportunities to see things about the goodness of God or just about his beauty. I think there's things that can compel us to think and like consider things, you know. So if you think of like an Interstellar, you know, and like, you can appreciate so many layers, right? You can think the music is like so rich and meaningful to the telling of the story and just also really beautiful by itself.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like it can stand alone, but it's not there to stand alone. It's there to serve the storytelling. But if you think of, again, just if you think of like how things get saved, if you will, or if you think about even contemplating a God who is not stuck in time like we are. You know, now you're like they might put words on it in the in the film or in the character or in the story. But that causes you to think about a God who is an author and he is not confined to time. And so it isn't it then is less bizarre to think about, you know, this here and this here, where we see it linearly,
right?
He is not stuck in the linear,
right?
Anyway, so I guess those are just some little examples. Some of the big things.
It's kind of looked like you had a thought. I was waiting for you to say something.
No, I was ready for you to
get the next question.
Yeah, man.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about several things, and they're all right here.
He keeps you need curiosity the down here.
I do. All my thoughts are right here.
Very structured. That's good.
Yeah. So one of the things I was curious about, because this is definitely a core theme that I see just generally in Christian theater, and I definitely have seen with you and when I was doing HPA, was the concept of we're creating to God's glory. We're trying to do this for the glory of God, ultimately. Even if we're doing a Mary Poppins or an Annie or a Honk or Wind Calls the Heart, you know, we still want to do this to the glory of God. What do you think, for you, what does that mean to create to the glory of God? And then what does that look like in the context of theater and of what you do in theater?
Good question.
Thanks. Yeah, that is going to be not a simple thing, right?
Yeah.
Because I think... like when I you know, I'm visual, and so I see things in, like, I'm compartmentalized, so I see things in like pieces or layers, and so like I'll talk about things on a plane, right? So if I take the plane of you know, doing it as unto the Lord, doing it to the glory of God, like, so if I go content, okay, okay, well, I think there is some content that, and it doesn't have to be, you know, evangelistic. It doesn't have to be the story, which is scripture. Right. Like, it can be something that's a tragedy or whatever. Like, but I do think the content has to be considered.
Yeah.
and there either has to be, I guess, what's serving a purpose. And so, but again, that can be a wide range of things. And I think there's, you know, when we talk about walking through the valley of the shadow of death, okay, well, there's there's stories that are going to reflect that, or tell that or share that. And we don't have to run away from them just because they're uncomfortable or they have a sad ending or whatever.
Right.
So, but I do think there are also content that you would say, okay, this is anti...
Right.
Anything that God has built,
right,
and so it's not it's kind of hard to say that I'm going to do that content as unto the Lord or to God's glory. I realize there's Christian liberty there for people to, you know, because there's people who, I'm sure there's people who would look at what we do and say, "How can you be doing that? You're saying
Annie,
it's unto the Lord,
right? Come on, why would you do
right.
Annie?
Right,
this pagan crap."
And
redheads, they're witches, man. That's your main character. What are you doing?
So that, on that layer, I mean, so that's one point, right?
Yeah.
On a plane.
Yeah.
But I think there's a big pool on that plane.
Yeah.
It's not unlimited, but it's there's lots of range of things. So then if you go to like, how do we do the craft? Right. Mm-hmm. Again, like I was saying before, you can't like be disrespectful to the audience and say, okay, we're not going to use any props. We're just going to mime them all.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden we're going to throw in a whole bunch of props. Mm-hmm. Like how we do it, you know, and if you will, learning the craft and executing the craft and being committed to it. And again, we're not going to reach perfection,
right?
But doing it with the goal of doing it to the best of our ability by God's grace and what he's given us and the opportunity that he's given us. And then if you go to the layer of even just like the organization, I'm thankful that God has brought many people to HPA who their gifting was organization and structure.
Yeah.
And so it has been built over the years by some great people with great giftings and I would say, you know, artists and theater companies don't tend to generally have a reputation of being well organized because it's usually a bunch of artists getting together. No finger pointing.
I can be organized. Look at that bookshelf. No, actually, that's not the organized bookshelf. Never mind. But look at that bookshelf or the desk.
Look at the bookshelf. I'm involved in a couple of these organizations.
But it's your room, so you don't have to.
That's
like,
true.
You know, it's not.
It's organized in mine.
You do a great job, buddy.
but even that sense of like, okay, if we're gonna say the schedule is from here to here, and so we are asking you to commit to it, then we need to be true to our word and say,
and honor you,
okay, we're not gonna expect you to say 10 hours longer.
Yep.
Right. Like somebody had to make plans. I mean, and when I think of the investment of the family for their child to participate in what we're doing. Like, I know it's that most of the kids are not driving themselves there and they're, you know, they're not doing this in a vacuum. It's
parents who are committing and make it. So anyway, so trying to be well thought through so that we're not just flippant, if you will, with you know, schedules and so I think of even that as doing something that's unto the Lord and serving the people who are participating.
And then so anyway,
I think you could take a million different layers. You know, we have opportunity to pour into the students, right? And so there, you know, I'll take an opportunity where I see, okay, here's something we're wrestling with a character, and just like time out a second, like how, think about this in real life, right? Mm-hmm. When are we tempted to make that terrible choice, or when are we, anyway, without being judgmental to the story or the character, we can still evaluate it and consider it and think about, okay, Lord, what do I need to do, either so I don't put myyself in that situation, or so that I can make a choice that honors you. And so there's lots of, anecdotal opportunities, of being able to talk through that and pull it back into real life. Because I guess would say when are they going to get that opportunity to hear that, to cause them to consider, you know, what's the choices you're making that might relate to this? You know, is there just like coasting along in their life or whatever? I think a lot of perspective, right? Like, and the older I get, then the hopefully there's some more perspective I can get. But part of it is seeing and calling them to that.
Yeah.
And if I can just time out and say that was something that Chris McDonald did for me when I was in Pirates of Penzance back, whatever that was, 20 something years ago. And I remember because I mean, I had instincts, but I didn't have any, you know, formal training in drama. I just remember her asking me questions about, you know, who was my character. And so, and this was like tech week, or I mean, a show week, like, a night or two before opening night. And I remember just like rocking my world, being like, holy cow, I never even thought about it. I just am trying to like entertain, I'm trying to like sing well and like do this well. And had really no clue because nobody had ever really caused me to think about that. And so again, that's one of those brooks in the water and stones in the brook that steered me, very much affected the trajectory of my directing style and
so cool
how to help the kids learn how to do the craft. I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah.
I wasn't that day, but I definitely was after that.
Yeah.
And see the fruit of that as I see, you know, how much, if I hadn't had that, like, fine, we might be doing nice stuff or whatever, but having that, then I see the fruit in my actors all the time of like, okay, they have built the character and know their motivations and their goals and all of that sort of thing. So that now they can make a choice in a moment of the story. I'm saying them as an actor can make a choice and it's like rich, it's deep, it's believable.
Yeah.
So now we're serving the audience by giving them something that they can sink their teeth into, believe.
And us, again, to that ripple effect, I know how you directed impacted a lot of John when he was under your directorship, along with Pris directing you as well. And then John's directed me in shows and has really helped me dig into these things as well. So it's just beautiful to see how these things get passed on beyond the direct.
And if you keep zooming out, right, think of like, because that was however many years Pris had been doing it. Right. And I'm going to think of going to... going to the CETA conferences and being able to be poured into by Dr. Patton and Pris. I remember her doing the one session on the we all had to pick a character from our town. And it was a little bit, it's just an exercise thing.
Yeah.
But I remember just being like, wow, that's so rich. And so I think about, richness is a word I use a lot. Yeah. Because if you think of, if somebody's just plunking around on a keyboard, that's fine.
Like I do every time
for
I come
that.
Into your house.
Yeah.
It's just whatever. It's like,
yeah, well, thanks. That's fine for that.
Right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. And I wouldn't say don't start somewhere,
right.
Don't not start because you can't be, but then to think about the richness of, a full orchestral score or something, mm-hmm. again, going back to, just the richness of that. Anyway.
No, I can really relate to that. And this has actually helped me think about some of what we were talking about earlier, because I played basketball in high school and that was more difficult for me than when I started doing theater after college, because I was like, oh, this is just having fun on stage. Mm-hmm. And whereas basketball, I've really had to mentally and physically push myself. And I think I probably did a lot of shows where I'm just like mainly just having fun on stage. And it's not really, I think it's been more like more recent shows of some of the shows that John's directed me in. That's like, oh, wait, that was difficult and I was being pushed, then maybe I just wasn't doing it right before.
Yeah, and I think of God's patience with us, mm-hmm. right? And so like the opportunity to grow, again, if that's I was there too, right? If that's where we were then, that's not a waste in the path,
right?
But hopefully God, as he promises to not just leave us where we are, but to like conform us to the image of Christ. Hopefully there's somebody along the way, like Chris did for us, that is helping us not stay where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess I would say not everybody wants to not stay where they're at.
Right.
But I guess as a director and teacher heart, I'm generally not going to let my actors stay where they're at.
Right.
I do have the luxury of educational setting. Mm-hmm. And so on some level, they have to listen to me, but they don't.
Right.
They don't really have to. But they do. I get, So anyway, I'm just saying, I'm going to push them. I'm going to drive them. I'm going to encourage them. Mm-hmm. And then some of that comes in the mix of having relationship with them, so that it's not just me barking at them all the time, right?
Right.
I would assume your relationship with John allowed
it's horrible.
Him
it's so
to yell
abusive.
At you.
Yeah. So it's the norm that I yell at him.
And you
it's fine.
Take it and see that.
Oh
because
yeah.
He cares for you.
Oh totally.
Leave you there
with such kindness, pushing along,
mm-hmm.
and it's such a picture of love when someone does that for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How important do you think you've mentioned the word serving a lot. How important do you think it is to have that servant's heart as you're navigating this, either as an actor who's creating or as a director trying to shape a performance or a teacher, or even thinking like a painter or a writer who's trying to hammer something out of nothing.
Right.
Nobody, neither of those art forms use a hammer, but I'll mix my metaphors. It's fine.
Yeah. Right.
How important do you think that is to...
Well, I think, again, as we talk about, how are we reflecting the Lord and his heart, and how are we reflecting Christ, who set aside his glory
mm-hmm.
to come and to redeem us? Like, he didn't do that for his own good.
Yeah.
But it was a really beautiful thing. Like, as we sit back, it was horrible.
Right.
But really beautiful when you think of what that is. So anyway, some of that is... Just operating, if you will, like Christ,
mm-hmm.
and it's like some of it we don't need to like over spiritualize. Some of it's just like, if the light is here, actor, don't walk out of the light because
that's
you're
not Christ-like.
At the core, you're not serving your audience by going and delivering this line in the dark.
Right.
When then they're confused because they can't see you, or because
they see it as a mistake, and now they're distracted from the story because they know that wasn't what you should do, or when a light's going to path through across your face.
Right.
Unless it was some super artsy convention, and then that's what you're doing all
they're
the time.
They're probably distracted then, too.
Some of them are, but again, if you establish this is how we are,
every character is lit like
Two
Faces. Right. Then you're like, this is
what we're doing.
Two Faces.
That's what the universe is.
Let's see if there was something else I was going to say about that.
I think it is real practical because in theater, because it is an interactive thing, right? And all of the process, that's all good. But in the end, we're sharing the story with people who are seeing the story, you know. And so, doing it in a way to serve them, and by serving, I don't mean the purpose of make them happy or make them entertained, but serve them in a way that they can enter into the story. They can hate the story if they want. They can love the story. They can think it was fun and funny. They can say, I'm never going to go watch that show again. Mm-hmm. That our responsibility is not to make them like it, but we can serve them by serving the story. And how we're going to serve the story is by us as the actor serving our character to bring that character to life so that the character can serve the story. And so sometimes then we have to die to self because there might be some things that are like, oh, this would get a laugh, or this would be, I'm going to enjoy it. I don't say you shouldn't enjoy it.
Right.
But the point is not us enjoying it. I would say, and this would reflect to your question of like, how do we glorify God? Because even as you think about the whole thing, like how the audience enters the building and how they get to their seat,
right,
is a part of serving them, not just because we want them to be happy customers, which we do, but if they have a bad experience getting to their seat, it's going to be really hard for them to enter into the story we're trying to share with them.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it's the intertwining of all of those things. I guess some of the, you know, if you think of sort of outside of theater, it might be different things. Like if somebody God has put on their heart to, you know, write a book or tell, you know, write, a, you know, create a story in a book, or even just share something, you know, to paint something or whatever. Like some of it is, and this is where we can often dissect too much. Like we, are we doing this for our self-gratification, or are we doing this for others? I think we can enjoy things without having it to be only self-serving.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be only about other people, and I can't enjoy it, or that's where it's like, I think of it as like it's a win-win.
Right?
Serve with it, and so I'm not a painter, so I can't exactly say what an artist's heart there would be to say I want to serve with this. I'm sure there are lots of people who have, like, they get a vision for, you know, here's this series of works that are going to help point to some truth.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are.
It's got to be.
I don't.
It's got
to be. No, all painters have been heathens.
Right.
No, I think that's beautiful. One of the things that came to mind when you were talking about that and thinking about the context of writing is the term kill your darlings, where a lot of times when you're in the editing phase of writing, that scene or that interaction or that great paragraph that you're like is so artful that you love so much is most likely the thing that's dragging down your writing, and that is causing a problem. And so, like, it's the number one piece of advice I hear in editing is just kill your darlings. The part of your book that you love the most, maybe it's connecting with people, but a lot of times it may not be, and you need to be willing to cut the piece that you personally love for the good of the whole, which took me a really long time to, like, get around to. I don't think it was until I was working on... I was at some point when I was doing short films and editing,
And I just, there was something I was like working so hard to try and get right because I just loved this scene. And there's just this beautiful, danceable visual because you can see the timeline there and you can see the preview there. And I was like, what if I just delete this whole sequence? So I just clicked on it, deleted it, compressed it, and then just watched the cut. And I was like, yep, that's it. It's great without all this 8 hours of work that I just put into this if I just get rid of that.
And but yeah, so dying to self there and say, like, even though I think this thing is beautiful, it doesn't serve the story or doesn't serve the audience taking in the story.
Yep.
I even see the reflection of that, you know, a parallel of that, you know, when you think of actors, you know, if we as actors are like, oh, this is going to be a great moment, boom, or whatever, and then we, again, kind of turn the focus on ourselves.
Yeah.
And it can be, again, probably more often unknown, unrealized, you know, that they're like always putting a pause dramatically right here. You know, it's like pauses are not terrible or sinful or anything like that.
Right.
They might be very useful.
Yeah.
But you're serving yourself with that one.
Yeah.
I mean, I might not exactly use those words. Or again, I'm not trying to over-spiritualize that. It might just be a tendency that they have. But they're comfortable with it, or it's right? So I'm all the time saying, like, if you're watching this, you can see I'm moving all the time, right? Well, if I'm playing a character who doesn't move, well, I've got to die to self. Mm-hmm. Because, and I appreciate that you guys didn't ask me to do that. I'll just keep flailing.
No, it's a casual environment. Brad, be a statue. Think of Shay as a gargoyle. Do that. We're getting close to an hour, so I guess I should wrap it up here. But this has been wonderful. I could keep going. I'd love to have you on again sometime. But I'm curious, one of the questions I always ask at the end is for resources. Because, you know, especially when I was, like, thinking about film, just finding different resources and books and things were so helpful to me. And so I want to build that and have that available for others. So what are some resources for you, either as a Christian in your walk or as an artist, that have been particularly helpful that you would recommend?
Yeah, there's a couple, as I think about that, there's a couple things. One, I remember Addicted to Mediocrity by Frankie Schaefer.
That's a great name.
It's and kind of sort of addressing the, if you will, dumbing down of Christian art.
Yeah.
So that was, I would encourage people to read that, let that be inspiring to, you know, high bar. And again, we need to be stewards of what God has given us. Like, if he has not given me the opportunity or whatever to go, you know, perform on Broadway, well, fine, I still need to be a good steward of what he has given me to do. And so, anyway, I think of that, and that would also go back to your painting and people who hammer sculptures. And
right.
Paintings.
Yeah.
This camera's.
I think of things on the whole. I think of having the freedom to, again, like I said, by God's grace, he allowed me to be able to trust him to take this step. Mm-hmm. So I think of that as freedom. Like, I was not bound by the truth of I needed to provide for my family.
Right.
I mean, I wasn't like throwing it away,
right?
But I was trusting him, so I had freedom. And so I think a lot about the freedom to take risks, to shoot high. Again, like you talked about, it's a safe place to fail, at least in the rehearsal process. And so I'm often trying to help my students learn how to be free, free to not serve themselves,
right?
Even free to not protect themselves. And I don't mean that as a, you know, as an absolute statement and, you know, go put yourself in
right.
these situations, but the sense of like, I can make a choice right now and it can totally bomb. And I say, awesome. That's part of discovering. I think as much of discovering what it is discovering what it isn't.
Right.
Like,
right.
Okay, now you know one thing it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now we can move forward. Mm-hmm. You know, so just thinking of things like our our being seated with Christ, because we are redeemed by him, gives us the freedom to go wherever he would have us to go, even if it doesn't look like a smart decision or conventional.
Right.
And again, I don't mean that as a, you know, you can't just apply that absolutely and say, well, I'm going to go do this risky thing and trust God will save me from running across the highway.
That's what Satan said for Jesus to do. Jump off the building.
Right. So sit, walk, stand was a devotional that actually one of my sons got for a graduation present. And it just was like a really great, I read through it. It's a short read, but just thinking about being at peace with God and his love for us and his completed work so that now we can go do things. We could go do the good work he's prepared beforehand for us to do. Where I'm sure lots of people, and myself included, right, it's going to be like, that's too scary, or I don't know what I'm doing, so I can't go do that.
Well, yeah,
I guess I would say we have somebody who does know, and we can trust in him, and we know he cares for us and loves us, and is going to glorify himself through us. So, if that's through our horrible failure, then may he be praised somehow in a way that I don't know how he can do that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, that's beautiful. I feel like a testimony like thing for me with that to like echo it and like emphasize that is kind of this podcast and artist the way in way. Because there was back in 2022, Shane, I met with you and Tanya and we were chatting with a bunch of people because I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing in my life. And I feel like I need to cut something out. And the thing I want to cut out is my job because that seems the thing I'm most specifically called to and I can't do that. And I was just processing all these things. And that was probably like a year before the podcast started. So a lot of these things were like definitely in my brain. And I was just like, I just had so many hangups about them on so many levels and like hangups about me being able to do them. And you just brought me back to that. You and one other friend of mine were just like, remember that there's freedom in Christ and that he's giving you so much more, and just thinking about that you're only here by the grace of God. And I, like, in the wake of that, like, went and, like, really studied through Romans 7 through 9 and that whole, like, oh, I'm really awful. Oh, but Christ has really redeemed me. And just the insane freedom that we don't live according to the flesh anymore. We don't have to hold on to that burden. But we live by the Spirit. We live to the Spirit now. We've been resurrected. We've been baptized. We died and came back and with Christ. And now we are, like you said, seated with him. Like just the insane freedom to say, oh, cool, then God's really got everything. Like there's nothing that I can't trust him with, even when that's scary. And for me, that was like personal failure of not necessarily like doing a creative thing and that being a risk, but like on a personal level, like if I step into this sort of world and that's what I'm making my life, can I still be a good Christian and a good husband and a good father eventually and all of that? And just the reminder of the freedom that we have in Christ is probably the reason that this is happening. And anything with artists the way, but I just, A, thank you. That was very shaping. But B, to like emphasize that, like there is so much beauty and freedom and joy to be found when you just trust God, which is not to say that then he'll be like, cool, you're not going to sin again, because I definitely have in the last 3 years.
That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I need to do it again. But just, it's beautiful. So I totally agree. And it's cool to hear that emotional where that was sort of the seed for me too. So sweet. Well, thank you so much. This has been a lovely conversation.
Yes.
I've enjoyed it so much. It's been great having you on.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah.